Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Wrap for the Round 22, brought to you by Crowcast, of course. And joining me tonight, as usual, is Macca. How you going, Macca?
Yeah, very good, thanks. I've got my letterbox fixed.
Oh, it might have been the only exciting thing we got to talk about tonight, actually. And Nikki, how you going, Nick?
I'm going well. Hope my voice holds out.
Very good. Good evening to everyone on the Spreaker chat and also to those joining us on Facebook tonight. We will get right into it, I think, with some results. Sorry. I'm finding it hard. I'm finding it hard to get motivated about the matches this week because I tell you what a dog's breakfast really when you think about it. Seriously, it's what did I do then? Crap. If you knew what I was doing at this end.
So we can actually go through the list of who played on Friday night.
That's right.
Do we really care?
Well, you know, we've got to. This is the show, and we've got to do it. So let's just go ahead and do it. If I can get my bloody slides right for the lovely people, there we go. God damn, what am I doing?
Now let's do it.
Is technology getting the better of you once again, fans?
It is actually getting the better of me, and it's surprising because you'd think that, you know, I'd actually be across all of this crap, but no, apparently not.
It's part of the charm.
Look, anyway, I'll sort this out in a second, but let's keep going. On Friday night, we had Richmond playing Essendon. Essendon, of course, fighting to keep their chances alive, but going down to Richmond, 12 goals, 19-81 to 11-7-73, by a margin there of 8 points in the end.
Good game to watch, I thought. In fact, Essendon were very brave, very courageous. Unfortunately, Richmond had also rested a few, and in spite of that, was still just that little bit too good. And, you know, with the advantage of playing always at the MCG and going to be minor premiers, they're going to be very, very hard to beat for the grand final.
It would seem so, wouldn't it? I mean, they're in such good nick, and Richmond have been playing really well. But they just were too good in the end, Richmond. Did you see it, Nick? No?
Not really interested in watching drug cheats or
right.
Richmond.
Oh, Nikki, come on. These that's a long time ago.
Not for some of them. My memory will never forget the drug cheats.
Okay, well, let's move on then. Because on Saturday we had a very good result. Collingwood beating Power 17-13-115 to 10 goals, 4-64. Pretty comprehensively in the end by 51 points there, and it was quite amusing listening to all the hoo-ha about that 50-metre penalty that apparently swung the game and was the difference. And last I saw, Collingwood won by 51 points.
Well, it was a post that were going a couple of games ago, and now it's a 50-metre. You know, it's never their fault. It's not the fact they're no fucking good, pardon my language.
Come on, Macca. Sunday night.
I like the fact that everybody was saying, oh, Port was so brave. You know, they came out, they kicked the first three, and they were so brave, so brave. But then they capitulated at the end. If they capitulated, they're not brave.
Brave, my bum. They did nothing in that last quarter. They just gave in like a limp piece of lettuce. And, it was good fun to see Hinkley sweating away in the box. So he's a very, very ordinary coach.
Well, that was an ordinary 50, though.
It doesn't matter, Nikki. It's one decision.
Yeah, it is. It's one decision. There's so much else.
Their game style is not going to win a grand. They're not going to win a premiership playing that way. And I know that they're covering for injuries and all the rest of it. But they're such a dour team, and they're never going to kick a winning a big enough score to beat the best teams in the competition at the moment. It's never going to happen. They're going to have to change.
I've said that for a whole year. They're unskilled. They've got very poor skills compared to the good sides.
Yeah.
And they picked, and we've actually said that they picked up players they already had a plethora of. Yeah. So why would you do that? It's just ridiculous. They didn't pick up to actually improve them. And Hinkley can't change his game plan.
Is it plethora or is it plethora?
Plethora.
I'm tired. Don't care.
There's another word that has double pronunciation. Anyway, then we had, speaking of inept, Geelong, 24 goals, 12, 158.
Oh, God.
Defeating, I think Fremantle were actually there. They kicked the first couple of goals, and they something. 3 goals, 7-25. A margin
did
of.
Did they actually send a football team?
Oh, look.
No, look, I thought Titus O'Reilly summed it up very well in his preview of the game when he said that Geelong were holding an open trading session.
Yep.
he did that one for the Richmond against the Suns as well.
Yes, and I must admit, they were shocking. Really shocking. I just saw maybe 1-2 minutes of the game and I thought, no, not for me.
Just ridiculous. I mean, 23 goals in a row, that's not AFL standard. Like, they can't be serious serving that up. You can't serve that up. Ross Lyon must be under a bit of pressure right now, in my opinion. That's not a sustainable performance, as far as I'm concerned.
He had a swinging match after the game with the media because they were sort of challenging him. How long does it take to rebuild? And he was getting all smart ass to them and saying, the fact that. 2 years. You expect us to rebuild in 2 years? Name me a side that's rebuilt in 2 years. And he was trying to belittle the guy that was making the comment. But the point is, really, I agree with you. From any coach that's serving that sort of stuff up with his team, it's got to be under scrutiny.
I would think so. I mean, Lyon's had a fair amount of time there now. And they're nowhere. They're absolutely nowhere. And I would imagine that it was such a coup for them supposedly signing him in the first place. But what has he done for that club? He's done absolutely nothing.
I agree.
So, it'll be interesting to see. I don't think anything will happen in the off-season for Ross Lyon, but I don't reckon he's in too good a shape with the board. He shouldn't be anyway.
He'll be all right, but he'll get through. He'll coach next year. But I would say that they'd be looking for some improvement next year, or maybe then he could be in a bit of trouble. Yeah.
Tyler's on the Facebook chat, and he says that he lives in Perth, and the story at the moment is that Ross is going to get the boot. So very interesting times ahead for Fremantle. They've gone a long time with no success. They've gotten close once or twice, but really, it's a bit of a rabble there. Anyway.
And lost their list manager.
Yeah, that's right. Lloyd's brother. What's his name? Brad? Brett?
Brad,
yeah.
Brad.
Now, on the other side of the coin, you've got Sydney Swans beating the Giants 11-14-80 to 8 goals 12-60. You just cannot help but be impressed by Sydney because they were on the canvas a month ago.
Yep. They have one of the highlights of the night of the whole round, really, this particular game. But you've also got GWS, who have got a lot of players already out injured and got more players injured during the game. And yet they led until towards the end of really until the last quarter. And Sydney, who never, ever give up, they got them at the end. And Buddy Franklin turned on a monster show. He personally monstered GWS and with some good help from Luke Parker. But a very good game to watch and very high standard compared to some of the other crap that we had to watch over the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, the Giants... Sorry, go on.
Just on that, though, there was one moment which did change that game, which was Phil Davis getting an injury and they had to take him off of Buddy.
It certainly had an impact.
He was holding Buddy so well and rebounding so much. But as soon as he got that injury and had to move him up forward, Buddy got off the chain.
I can totally agree with you, Nicky. And as I say, GW is very brave, but also Phoenix is totally right. Sydney just never give up. And they looked like they were on the canvas a few weeks ago, and here they are. They're going to play in the finals, and you know that they'll give a good showing.
Yeah, you'd love following the Swans at the moment. because they always give you something. You know, I mean, they struggle at times, and at times they look second rate. But at the business end of the season, I mean, they're going to end up they're in a good position now to have a top four spot and a double chance. And we had them missing the eight a month ago.
Yep, I remember during the game. I think there was a comment that if they make the final, which they look like doing, and they will, it'll be something like 11 or 12 years in a row, I think they said.
Yeah, it's a massive effort.
It's pretty amazing.
And
as much as we were kind of that time, we were bagging that, you know, Longmire just coaches one way, and you know what you're going to get against Sydney, and that their midfield is slow and can get exposed because of that. But I think we also noticed that one of the things was that they now can't win at home, but they win away because they have actually tweaked their game plan. So he figured out he was their Achilles heel, was they couldn't win on the MCG. The game plan didn't work for that. Now they are winning on those bigger ovals, which is what Spotless Stadium is as well. But they can't win at home. It's just kind of this little catch 22.
Actually, it's quite an astute point, Nicky, because they've lost, I think, it's five at home, and they've got a very important game to play up there on the weekend at home, and it'll be interesting to see if they can win it, because I'm sure they have tweaked their game plan to suit the bigger ovals.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's move on, and quite a willing game, this. Who knew there was such bad blood between these two teams? A bit of back and forth during the week, and then some ungracious efforts, I reckon, by a couple of Brisbane Lions players in the end, Zorko and a couple of others. But the Lions getting up 10 goals, 18-78 to the Suns, 11-8-74, 4 points there. Yeah, you know, say what you like, but I think it's good for the game and probably good for the Gold Coast Suns that some rivalry builds up between those clubs.
Yeah, and a pity for them too, because they actually led until fairly late in the game. But I did like the where Fagan, the coach of Brisbane Lions, when in his aftermatch press conference, apologised on behalf of what Robertson said. And said, you know, he was the usual standard, he'll learn from that. He probably won't.
Yeah.
He probably won't.
No.
But, I thought it was good that he actually said that out publicly and put that apology out there because, it's good to stoke things up like that. And it did, there was a lot of bad blood between them.
Surprising amount, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. But
when you get called soft.
I would like to see Gold Coast win it, but Brisbane Lions just a little bit too good for them.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, the Saints. So where did they get that one from? 11 goals, 10-76, just going down, pushing Hawks all the way, 12 goals, 8-80, margin there of 4 points. And Hawthorn looked like they'd already had one eye on the finals, to be honest. But St Kilda, their skill level kills them every time.
Now, it's that time of the year where seasons are over and players' careers are on the line and they start pulling their finger out.
Mm.
Well, they certainly played
a lot. You always get results like this once a team's season is over.
Well, they played above what I would have expected them to play. It was a 50-50 game. And Fernie is right. St Kilda had the same skill level as Hawthorn. They would have trounced them. Because Hawthorn's got much better skill, but in the end, just a 4-point margin.
Yeah.
And they had so many chances to score.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They really should have won that game, St Kilda. Look, Hawthorn are also sniffing around, and I reckon they're one of the teams that form goes out the window at times in finals, and I think Hawthorn are one of the teams that can get under Richmond's skin, so it'll be interesting to see if they do get a double chance.
Definitely.
What sort of damage they can do going forward. And the last, Carlton Bulldogs, who cares? 10 goals, 6-66, 7-7, 49. Bulldogs getting up. Who really cares?
That was a lot closer than I expected.
Yeah, but again, I guess it's same sort of thing. When you've got two teams that are playing for nothing,
yeah,
you know, the result can is irrelevant, really. It's just a training run. And Melbourne probably stamping their finals credentials, I think. That was a really, really strong win by Melbourne. West Coast came back at them late, and Melbourne prevailed in the end reasonably comfortably by, 17 points, 16-12, 108 to 14 goals, 7-91 on West Coast's home deck.
Yeah, I think the turning point in that game really was West Coast losing their key forward, and they really didn't have an organised forward line after that. And, whereas Melbourne, look, I'm not taking anything away from Melbourne. Melbourne had to travel, and I think, you know, Melbourne, they seized the whole of the game, and they didn't. Then West Coast did grab it from during the last quarter, but then Melbourne steadied again, and at the end, we're running right over the West Coast again, right at the end. So, sadly, I was hoping Melbourne would lose for our drafting position. we get their first draft pick, but look, they had a deserved win.
They did.
Now, because I didn't see it, so what actually happened to Darling? I heard it was something like a tackle, but he got injured.
Yes, it was, and he's hit his head on the ground. It didn't look much at the time that he was tackled. They reckon. Now, it's amazing if it's not an Adelaide player involved in the tackle, doing the tackle, everything seems to be okay. But, you know, look, he's turned him, he's rolled him, and he's thrown him to the ground, and he's hit his head, and that's the rest of the story. But does he not have a duty of care either? I don't know. This thing's got me beat with a duty of care about the head.
Well, I think it's a very good point, Macca. Texas' suspension last week, it wasn't a sling tackle by definition. It was certainly a double-action tackle, and it resulted in a head injury.
Elements of a sling tackle.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of difference. There really isn't a lot of difference, and the outcome is the same. The West Coast lost Darling for the match. It did have an impact. It should be looked at. It'll be very interesting to see if they actually even mention it in dispatches.
Yeah, and there's a couple in our game that should be looked at as well.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So anyway, we're left with a ladder of... it's almost set now. The top four is still up for grabs. We've got Collingwood, Hawthorn, Sydney and the Giants, all possibly... I don't think Melbourne can make top four. All vying for a top four spot. You've got Richmond and West Coast pretty much set. Port Adelaide out of the eight and likely missing the eight now due to their terrible percentage, and Geelong having their home game next week against the Suns. And after that percentage booster against Frio, that's pretty much them done. North Melbourne also done today. Essendon also done. Adelaide also done. Western Bulldogs, Fremantle, Brisbane, St Kilda, Gold Coast and Carlton. Let's talk about us, eh, shall we?
Because you sound so enthused.
Get ugly. Damn, that's ugly.
It was only ugly because no one cared, I think.
I cared. I was there.
Well, what was the crowd atmosphere like, Nikki?
It was that little quiet kind of murmur in that first quarter when they started to get a bit of the, you know, the start of that first quarter where they had control of it, and we're like, oh, here we go. Here's a midfielder. Poor bloody back line. They're going to be under it all game. And then part of the way through, we tightened up the midfield. We really started to pressure them, and the crowd started to get a bit more involved. They said there was 41,000 there. Pretty sure they're lying.
Yeah.
I think there was less than that. But, you know, it got noisy at times with some of the stuff. We got a little bit frustrated with some passing, but there were some other amazing passes that happened. And then when they were really getting that run on in the last – there was, as you can hear from my voice, and a run on with assistance from three men in green. There was a bit more noise, and then that final, the 18 seconds to go. There was a lot of noise.
Would you say, Nikki, that it's fair to say that the players played with a fair amount of freedom, that they've been told, apparently I think they've been told to go out and just enjoy themselves, and it certainly looked at times like that's what they were doing.
Oh, there were some beautiful passages of play that we actually had, some really proactive handballs, and we were very much in their face and restricting that midfield as much as we could. And you saw the results of it, that by doing that, Brown hardly got a sniff at the ball. It's only when there was that little fast break. But there was some smart play that was going on. I think that frustrated people because we kept, like, kicking it back and around and everything. It's like Sauce at one stage, you marked on the wing and then he kicked back into the back lines. Everyone's like, ugh! And I'm like, look ahead. They've got Waite and Majak Dawe standing in that hole. Everybody else is manned up. He had nowhere to go. He had to bring it back and open up. It was actually smart play, but people only focus on that little bit.
Once we lost Duday,
that was hard.
Do you know, Nick, I just asked you how the crowd was. No, I didn't ask for a match summary.
Sorry, but then Macca asked me about, you know, some of the play.
It's all good. Look, Adelaide getting up in the end, 12 goals, 14-86 to 11-77 with a bit of a last quarter fight back from the Roos, as you mentioned. JJ kicking three for us and Jared Waite having a little cameo and a burst at the end there where he looked like he might break the game right open, especially with Tom going down. We really didn't have a matchup on Jared Waite, and he ended up with three as well. Look, I'm sure on Tuesday night live, we're going to talk about the merits of the team that we selected and all the rest of it. So how about tonight we just try and stick to the script and just talk about the game, we'll leave the bigger questions till Tuesday night, because I reckon there'll be a lot of discussion about the team that we put on the park. But look, I was pleased to see the endeavour of the. At the start, the first 5 minutes, I thought we were so flat we were going to get rolled by 15 goals. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah, I don't think we'd been revved up at all for the game. I think we'd... And I can't remember who it was who was interviewed after the game, and they said that I think they said they'd been told to just go out and enjoy themselves. And
yeah, that was Eddie Betts, I think.
Automatic. Yeah, and they looked like that. Yeah, they started off that way, and then they sort of seemed to realise that they've got to put a bit of effort in as well. And I think, you know, our midfield started to get on top. Once we got on top in the midfield, Crouch had a terrific day getting the ball, and Gibbs, as did Gibbs. Laird hanging around, running through, and Miller and that. We got a lot of possession and some very good possession. And from, say, probably about two-thirds of the way through the first quarter onwards, until about a third of the way into the last quarter, they were no threat at all. Looked like we were just toying with them.
Yeah, then agree, Macca.
Then they had that burst, and we put. Then we finally, we put. Well, I forgot the bloody name. 41. McGovern back.
McGovern
back. And as I said on Tuesday, I would have liked to see him play the whole game back there, because up forward, he was pretty pathetic, I thought. But when he went down back, he was reading the ball beautifully, and he looked like a very good player. And would have been the best way to run him back into top form, in my opinion. But that's just my opinion.
I know we're not talking about, bigger picture stuff, but Gov looked really disinterested for large portions of the game to me.
No, he wasn't.
Sorry, Nicky, I have to agree with Phoenix there.
Looking on the camera. You're not looking at the game, and the camera's once again not showing you everything that he's doing.
And you can't see his facial features, etc., from about 100 metres away either, Nicky.
That's very true.
His faces always look like that. He's always looked like that. Even when he's, like, having amazing games, his face generally tends to look like that.
Well, Phoenix,
you're reading something into it that's not there.
Well, I will stick with Phoenix on that one. I'll stick fat on that one, because, in my opinion, he doesn't look like a player who really wanted to be there.
Well, it wasn't so much...
He's not going anywhere, trust me.
Wasn't so much that. It was more... it was the reactions after goals and all that sort of stuff. It was how the other players were getting around him. And you're right, Nicky, you know, I mean, we could be reading stuff into things and...
You are. He's always like that.
Well, you can't say categorically that we are. In your opinion, we are. So, in my opinion, it did look as if he was slightly disengaged. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's, the situation with Gov is going to be very interesting in the off season, and it could be all, you know, that smoke. And well, it could be. It could be. You can't say categorically that it won't be.
He may well be the pawn that Adelaide uses to try and get hold of the number one, number two pick.
Well,
bundle,
you know.
You bundle them up with the first round draft pick and you'll get it.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seemed a little bit disengaged. The players didn't really seem to get around him terribly much. But, you know, as I said, and you're right, Nick, could be reading stuff into it that's not there. But I he did look good down back. I felt he looked very good down back, actually. So
no, he'd be a gun down there, a gun, because he does read the play beautifully down there. He's just like his brother does, and he's got a beautiful set of hands. And when the ball's coming in like that, where he's not having to be the one getting hammered from behind, he looks very, very good.
Yeah. So, look, let's run through. I'm trying to get some stats going here, and it's not happening for me. So, the late game stuffed me up. So, our pretty graphics probably aren't going to work tonight for the stats, but I will reel some off because look, head to head was interesting. 464 disposals to 372. We just went 1-1, kick to handball, and Matty Crouch was probably the one that contributed to that the most. Marks 120 to 101. Yeah. Tackles 57.
Record number of handballs.
Why are you actually why are you interrupting me?
Because it's Macca's job.
To give you a fact.
Well, give it to me when we're talking about Crouch. Hitouts 30-38. Goldstein. I didn't think Sauce played too bad. Where were we? Scoring shots 26-22. Obviously, where's our inside 50s? 56-47. That was even more skewed up until the last quarter. Rebound 50s were even at 36 apiece. Just flicking the page over, our contested possessions 147-136. Uncontested possessions were massive disparity, 321-241. That really reflected the two different styles of game. North, for the large part of the game, had numbers back, and we were just trying to pick through their zone before they really opened it up in the last quarter. 350 effective disposals to 274, 75%. Disposal efficiency. Look, contested marks, I felt we got beaten in the air, 10-16, marks inside 50, 11-13. Clearances, we were not bad, 37-30, although again a lot of that was stoppage clearances, and whilst we did win centre clearances 13-11, I felt again for large portions of the game our centre clearance work wasn't great. Around the stoppages was good though, 24-19. Turnovers 72-79, intercepts 79-74, tackles inside 50, which I thought again let us down terribly. Our forward pressure 6-14. Now you can talk, Macca.
Oh, just to put my hand up.
Yes, yes. You should be used to that at home.
2 games to go, and he's finally, you know, he doesn't want to interrupt.
Well. I was only adding to what he was saying about the fact that Crouch was one of the mainly responsible for it. And
come on, stop looking and make a bloody comment.
I was adding the fact that he was 35 handballs, and that 35 handballs is a record in the game. And shut up, Jason McKay, I am awake.
Yep, he what is it? He beat Tom Mitchell's by one.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
AFL had Matty Crouch as our best. I couldn't see it. We'll talk about that when we get into the individuals, but I wasn't terribly impressed with Matty Crouch's game, to be perfectly honest with you.
Oh, no, he had a very good game.
I thought he had some really... So, a lot of the... So, yeah, he had the 35 handballs, and I've ragged on Tom Mitchell before. Like, he gets so many possessions, everything else, but they're often in too close, and I can't see how proactive they are so much. But I thought Crouchy was really proactive with a number of those handballs, which really opened up the play.
In the last quarter, when the pressure was on Nicky, Matt Crouch did 3 handballs over his head to no one.
To watch that quarter.
Yeah. It was very noticeable. And one of them resulted in... one of them resulted in a goal to North, Matt Crouch is still not in great form in my opinion. And when you've got such a disparity, he's got a 2-1 handball to kick ratio in 45 possessions. And yes, some of them were very good and constructive, but a lot of them weren't. A lot of them weren't. And we rag on about Tom Mitchell being ineffective with the amount of disposals that he gets, and that I felt that was the type of game that Matt Crouch had tonight. He wasn't damaging with his disposals.
Well, I think you're not giving him a lot of credit for a setup that they obviously have at boundary throw-ins, and in particular where Crouchy stands in the front, the ball comes forward, he gets it and he knows where a Crows player is and shoots it out to him, and mainly it was Gibbs. Gibbs was one of the main recipients today. And rather than turning around on his left foot and kicking blindly, he gives it to a player who's well aware the ball's going to come to him, and that player then uses the ball a lot better. I think you're selling him very short, and I think to get the ball 46 times in itself is an achievement.
No, it's and not. Not when you're a front running midfielder. Not when you're our number one or number two midfielder and our number one inside midfielder.
Well, I think it
how,
is.
How many times though does mid do midfielders get those numbers regularly over the 40s? There's not too many.
They don't.
There's not too many that do.
And on top of that, a lot of them were, they're just little. Yeah, there were some that were wasted, and then there's always going to be when you've got 46. But there were also a lot that I thought set up play, and I thought he had an extremely good game.
So in the first quarter, he had one...
Yeah, I wouldn't say he was best, but I think he was in the best players.
In the first quarter, he had 1 kick and 10 handballs, Macker. In the second quarter, he had 3 kicks and 10 handballs. He had 4 kicks and 20 handballs to halftime.
Yeah, and I did make a comment, Mrs. Mack, at halftime, but I think there were about, probably in that first half, at least half a dozen times he should have kicked rather than handball.
That's what I'm getting at.
But that also means there were a hell of a lot of times that he did the right thing as well.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I reckon it might have been addressed at halftime because he went 5-9 in the third quarter and 2-6 in the last. I feel like when Matt's not quite on song... and look, don't get me wrong, I think he's a wonderful player and his best is very, very, very good. But I feel like when he's not on song, he's a bit of a hot potato player. He doesn't seem to have a great deal of time with ball in hand, and he tends to give the first option. And sometimes he sells other players into trouble, or he doesn't look for an opportunity to be aggressive with his ball movement. And there are times I think that he could take an extra second and use the ball by foot a bit more, which he does do when he's on top of his game.
Well, while I agree with you on that, there are those occasions, I do think you're generally very harsh on him. It was either last week or the week before that you said you didn't like his game, and yet both Pike and the opposition coach gave him 5-5 votes as best.
Well, that's good.
So what I'm saying is I think you're generally harsh on him.
Well, I could be.
Well, that's my comment. Where would you want it to go now?
You know what? What I want to see over the pre-season is he work with Gibbs about how Gibbs is able to do those sidesteps, create that space, because he's a master at it. That gives him that little bit of opportunity to size it up and then make the decision.
And that's a classic example, Nick. Sorry, Mac.
No, that was it. That was, that was really those two mainly working together, I think, where it becomes very, very productive. But you're right, though. There are times when he overdoes it, when there is an option to kick it, and then he tries to find somebody with a handball and probably makes it slightly not quite as good as it was. So, yes, and I think he probably may have been addressed at halftime. But having said that, it still takes a lot of work to get 46 possessions.
Of course it does. Of course it does. And when you're right next to the play, it's less difficult. Look, we had Rory Laird on 20 and 21. That's a nice ratio. 21 kicks, 20 handballs for 41 disposals, 9 marks, 2 tackles, 4 inside 50s, 5 rebound 50s. What else have we got? 8 contested possessions, win at 73%, which is always good when Laird's disposal efficiency is up over 70s. 4 score involvements, gained us 452 metres. Turned it over a little bit 8 times, but 6 intercepts as well. I thought he was pretty rock solid.
He played a very good game, extremely good game, and he always plays a very good game. He also does a few jackrails running past and getting possessions that way too. But I don't mind because he's a very good user of the ball. But
except also, when he does the dolly kicks high up in the air.
Big pun?
So when he does his little dolly kicks to go high up in the air.
Yeah, that's probably the only criticism sometimes.
Yeah, but you've got to take it on an overall percentage of what he does, Nicky. You end up with a pretty good efficiency rate.
But that's the same thing. Is you're forgiving Lairdy that he does that, and yet you're not forgiving Crouchy. And that they both have their limitations.
Yeah,
of course.
In terms of some skills. The fact that we've got both of them is an absolute bonus. They had Anderson. I think they were trying to tag him a little bit at times. Then once again, didn't really work.
I had them both, those two, as the two best on for us anyhow.
Yeah. Laird did his best work in the third quarter. He had 12 effective disposals out of 12. He did turn it over a little bit in the first half. But I felt overall he was pretty good. It was actually very hard for me to pick a best player. Sloaney, again, 6 and 23 for 29 touches, 3 marks, 6 tackles, 3 inside 50s, 11 clearances for Rory, 20 contested possessions, 76% disposal efficiency. His clearance breakdown, 6 centre clearances, 5 stoppage clearances. Didn't gain us a hell of a lot of meterage, 147. He was a bit more in and under than usual. 3 score involvements and 8 intercept possessions. I probably would have had Sloaney as my best, actually, in terms of all-round game.
Yeah, my one criticism, what was his efficiency rating with his disposal?
What did I say? 76%?
Yeah, that was actually good, considering how in close he was working. And he was that in and under macker. He was doing that desperation stuff that we love so well from him, just getting the hand in, trying to stop them breaking free. Some really great, you'd call them almost tackles, but it was enough to put that pressure on that they then couldn't get a clean getaway and allowed us to pressure even more.
I think you gave a great example to the side of how you should work your ass off to try and get the ball. No doubt about that. I thought he was very, very good at that.
Yeah. Again, look, a bit of a criticism of the kick-to-handball ratio. The second quarter, second and last quarter, he had 0 kicks in both those quarters. And, you know, I know he was playing inside a bit more, but, you know, we have Huey and we have Matty Crouch, and Sloaney's great strength is getting on the outside and using his leg speed and his penetrating kick, and I just don't think we're using him effectively at the moment.
What, Sloaney?
Yeah, I don't think we're using him effectively. We're not using his strength.
I think that's probably what he's not using it because...
It's the role that he's got to play, Macca. When he's getting 20 contested possessions and when he's getting the clearance numbers that I just read out, he's obviously got a role to play inside the contest, and I don't think that's the role that takes advantage of his strength.
No, not necessarily. I don't know whether he's following instructions or whether he just chose to do that. I can't comment on that, but he certainly can't. I know what you're saying is correct because he's very damaging when he's outside like that, but I just think he can't help himself. I think he just goes in there.
Yeah, but if he's not there, then he... If you understand what I mean, like it's where he's positioned, and I get the fact that he's a bit of a see-ball, get-ball kind of guy, and that to his credit. But six kicks from Rory isn't using... It's either him or team instruction, whatever, but six kicks from Rory is not using him effectively, in my opinion.
Oh, I can't argue with that. That's fair enough.
Yeah. Gibbsy, 14 and 13 for 27. Three marks, kicked a goal, five tackles, four clearances, three inside... Oh, my eyes are going. Three inside 50s. Two rebound 50s. He only had seven contested possessions, so he definitely was an outside player for us. Only went at 70%. I thought he was a bit sloppy with his disposal. What else have we got here? Three stoppage clearances, one centre clearance, seven score involvements. Turned it over a couple of times, 381 metres gained. As I said, I just felt that Bryce looked a little bit sloppy.
Well, I think that in general, I thought there was a little bit of that attitude about the players today. That I think that it's quite right. They've been told to go out there and enjoy themselves. And you are right. And when you look at the overall handball ratio to kicks, it's not right. It's far too many handballs overall. And I think that's the players have just played their own game.
I think some of that was because of the. What we were up against. I mean, North Melbourne do try to clog things up, and we were specifically trying to pick our way through their zone. I felt like we overused the ball in the back half. There were a number of times that we got ourselves into trouble with errant disposals and then a chain of handballs that just sold the next bloke into trouble and, you know, often resulted in a turnover. And I feel in general we overuse the handball, and I think that contributed to a pretty lackluster inside 50 method because, you know, as well as I do, that when the ball bounces around and it's unpredictable in terms of the path that it's taken coming forward, the forwards have got no hope.
Well, that's true. It makes it very, very difficult.
Well, forwards got no hope when they're being continually held on and shoved off the ball. That's what was happening. I disagree with you on Gibbs because when they really got a run in the last quarter, that's when Gibbs had to be, he was plonked in the forward line. And we were just looking at a midfield, the way it was going, we need Gibbs back in that centre. Because when he was in that centre, we were so much more proactive. We were so much freer. And a lot of it was him actually creating that space, directing that little bit of traffic to get it out clear. I actually have him up there in the best players for me. He might not have got the most possessions, etc., but I thought his influence when we were playing well was, and when he was pulled out of that midfield, was really telling.
Yeah, well, he was had a good game, but he was mainly playing as an outside player, Nicky. When you're right, when he wasn't around the centre, he's not there to give the ball to. And he is generally a fairly good user of the ball and generally makes good decisions. Good game.
Nicky, you're dead set right, though. That last quarter, he had one handball for the quarter. Now,
kept him bloody out of there.
I've been banging on about this now for a couple of weeks, and it's, again, what I was referring to with regards to Rory Sloane. I don't know whether we're playing using the strengths of our players. Last week we had the situation where during that third quarter within the GWS game, our two-gun inside midfielders hardly got a sniff at centre clearances. They only appeared at three out of about 8 or 9. This week, we're taking our premier quarterback midfielder, our bloke that distributes the ball. We had him playing that way in the first three quarters. It's a pretty good effect. You're right, Nick. And we play him up forward in the last for no particular reason other than maybe to cover off Mitch going back, although Mitch only went back for the last 10 minutes. And as a consequence, he goes from having 12 touches in the third quarter to one handball in the last. I don't understand.
Ridiculous, isn't it? That is ridiculous.
It's not a... And, you know, they might have been trying stuff, with regards to setups and structures and all the rest of it. We don't know. But on the surface, it just seems like a bizarre move to make. I don't get it. And you're right, Nick. It had a big impact on the game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think Campo needs to go.
Well, yeah. Rory Atkins got a lot of the ball, 15 and 12 for 27, took 6 marks, 3 tackles, 3 inside 50s, 4 rebound 50s, only the 5 contested possessions, but as an outside player, that's not bad, 70%. Disposal, 1 stoppage clearance, 3 score involvements, gained us 423 metres, turned it over a bit 7 times, 3 intercept possessions. I'm not quite sure what to make of Rory Atkins' game, to be honest.
Mixed bag. He did some good things, but a couple of times there he tried to emulate what Miller was doing, dancing in and out of players. He certainly doesn't have the same ability that Miller does.
He still got away from them, though.
Well, sort of, Nicky, but they ended up with a ragged disposal rather than what he could have done in the first place, which was a decent disposal.
Well, there's one that there was that beautiful pass to Lynch.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. When he's out in the open and he concentrates on what he's doing, he's got a deadly foot. And, I'd like to see him concentrate on doing that a bit more rather than dancing around people all the time. Leave that to Miller. He's the star at it. But, Rory did some good things and he did some Rory things. But
I think that the comment that Vardy Magic made, he played with decent intensity. And that's what I liked from his game. There was a rise in intensity and keeping involved in the game for longer.
I also agree with just here. I agree with he did with just.
Look, at the end of the day, if we're talking about players playing their role and us using their strengths, then you know, as long as Rory goes when he needs to go, I don't expect him to be Jack Zeeble bloody knocking people out. But as long as Rory goes when he needs to go, and he did lay a couple of tackles, and I felt like he was involved in the play. I actually don't like. You pointed out that pass that he kicked to Lynchy there, Nicky, and it was a perler. We need more of that from Rory. I felt like he was playing quite deep defensively. He's one of the few guys that can distribute into forward 50 really effectively, and I feel like he needs to be one of our outlet players. When we're transitioning, he needs to be the bloke that we're trying to release to get the ball into our forward 50, and I don't think we actually do that often enough.
No, I agree with you. No, well, I mean, when he is doing that, I don't think there's any player in the team, perhaps other than Miller, who can do it as well as him.
Yeah, he's got a very good eye for kicking to grass, Macca, and that's exactly what he did. He almost led Lynch to that ball that he passed in.
Not almost, he did.
Yeah.
And that's
the sign of someone who can see the game really well. And when he's got time and space, we know that he's a really good kick. So, these are the things I think maybe we lack a little bit that we, you know, Atkins, and maybe it was because Brody Smith was a late withdrawal, and you know we got messed around with our structures with Tom going down as well.
That sent D-Mac back into the back lines.
Oh, it should have sent D-Mac into the stands. But anyway.
I liked his game.
Why? Because he bumped into a few blokes. Come on.
I'm sorry. Did you miss those beautiful timed runs that he did pass to receive the ball?
It was amazing. I set my watch to them. That was so well timed.
No, they were actually really good. And yeah, he was reading the play so well, and because he had to go back, it meant that Seed and Rat had to play longer on the wings.
Yeah.
All I can say, he must have offended somebody at North Melbourne because they also be trying to kill him all day.
Well,
they were so dirty.
No, they weren't dirty. They just played hard. I wouldn't mind betting that D-Max got a busted rib.
He ought to have one after some of the knocks he got.
Yeah.
He still kept running.
Yeah. But anyway, we're talking about D-Max. Who else we got? Seed, I thought, was reasonable. 16 and 7 for 23, 7 marks.
Should have been 8.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he dropped the car. He definitely dropped the car.
Yeah. And, you know, the certain irony...
And Jack Dore was not happy about that happening.
The certain irony about it was that the only reason he dropped it was he actually leapt too high, and the ball actually went in underneath his hand. You know,
yeah, he got his thumbs.
Yeah, yeah, it was just underneath his hands. He'd gone up so high. And I reckon if he'd taken it, he would have got the car, yeah.
Yeah, oh, definitely. It was, I mean, not only was he high, but he was high on Magic Door, who's about 9'8". So, you know. Anyway, poor old Seeds.
He would have gained a lot of ground too, wouldn't he?
His meters gain?
One moment, please. 4 tackles. It's like I'm a servant to you guys now. 7 inside 50s, 5 contested possessions, winner 82%. What else have we got here? 7 score involvements, and meters game 574. So certainly team high, probably game high, actually. Yep, game high, 574. And, you know, he was one bloke that I felt like we were using correctly. He was skirting the outside of the contest, but he was going when he needed to go. Using his long kicks to pretty good effect.
Yeah, we use it. What you're really saying, he's got certain assets and we use them well.
Yeah. He's a harder player than I think people give him credit for, though. Would you agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, look, I've never seen him as a squib, but he did pull out once when he was playing with Collingwood. And he missed about the next 10 games because of that.
Yeah, but he's had to carry that his whole career. And I've seen him...
But it was only one incident. It was just the one incident.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's ridiculous because that's all we heard from Collingwood supporters. Oh, he's soft, he doesn't go in hard or whatever.
I remember,
yeah, but that's what we were told. That this, he's like this. We watch him all the time. And he doesn't go in. He doesn't like to tackle. And I went and watched, like, the first trial or pre-season game or whatever we did. I think it was at Sturt Oval. And he was hitting blokes hard and tackling. And I'm going, this is not what they told us. And he's never played soft at all the entire time he's been with us. He's happy to take you're never happy to take a hit, but it's football. You have to take the hits.
Yeah.
And he's very happy to dish them out.
It's amazing how a man can get branded on one incident.
Yeah, absolutely, and unfairly, because he's shown throughout his time at the Crows that when he needs to go, he goes, and he's a good tackler. I mean, we're not going to get into this, but I didn't really want him to play because I felt like we were just playing, you know, Russian roulette with his hamstrings, but I'm glad that he got through it anyway. Who else can we talk about? I thought Tommy Lynch was all right. 17 and 6 for 23, took 8 marks.
Miller.
One moment, please.
Just my request.
You guys, I'm going to mute you both and just do the bloody show by myself in a minute. 7 inside 50s, 5 contested possessions. Wasted it a bit, 60.9 disposal efficiency, 7 score involvements, though. And 387 metres gain. I felt like we used Lynch a little bit better, or he certainly positioned himself a little bit better this week and got on the end of a few chains, whereas he seems to have been in the past couple of weeks a bit caught for space.
Yep. We did use him better, and he had a reasonably good game. Barty Magic says that he was in and out of the game, and I would agree with that. He when he flashed in the game, he did it well, and perhaps not quite enough, but overall, he gets a pass mark, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was one of his better games we've seen from recently. I kind of For me, if we were going to bring in Himmelberg, it would have been swapping for Lynch. And, you know, because we've talked about it, we think he's possibly injured or he just hasn't been the same Lynch that we know. He's getting a lot more attention.
I reckon. Do you know what? I reckon he's got groin problems, Nikki, because there was one point there where the ball got turned over and Lynch had to get on his bike to you know, take up a defensive zone position.
And he was running in treacle.
Oh, and not only that, he was taking very short steps, which is usually a sign that a bloke doesn't want to tweak a groin. I reckon he's got some pelvic issues there, maybe some OP or some sort of groin issue, because he's just not, he doesn't stretch out at all.
No, yes. Very good point. And you know, by this stage of the season, a lot of players have sore groins, and as you say, they get a little bit wary about pegging them. And Lynchy has slowed down as the season's gone along.
Yep. Yep. I mean, he's been crook and, you know, well-documented injury problems, but it was very noticeable to me that when he has to stretch out, and even his kicking style is very compact, like he places the ball onto his foot and it's a very stabbing motion. He certainly doesn't extend his leg when he kicks. Maybe that's just his style of running. Who else? Wayne Miller, upon request, 14 and 9 for 23, 7 marks, 3 tackles, 8 rebound 50s. Only 2 contested possessions, but he was certainly in amongst it. 91% disposal efficiency is outstanding. 2 score involvements, 355 metres game, 4 intercept possessions. I probably had him in our top 3.
Well, certainly in the best, anyhow.
That third quarter where he started just marking everything when they were kicking out of defence, they then swapped it up, and it was hilarious to watch them figure out, oh, Miller is over there. We have to go this side. They were trying so hard to keep the ball away from him.
This year's been very good for him, the move down back, and he's really developed this year. I can't wait to see how good he's going to be next year.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they try to get him into the midfield next year.
I think another year at halfback would be excellent for him.
I think I'd prefer him off of half back, because we've kind of seen push him on the wing every so often, because that will, I think, exploit, that's his probable spot. But he does need to run at the ball. The one I want to see in the midfield, and I thought did some nice things tonight, is Gallucci.
Going to be a good player.
Because that speed, we need speed in our midfield.
Not only that.
God, he's an intelligent footballer.
Yes.
He's all of those things that you mentioned, plus he is a bloody hard unit. He took some hits in that game. He took a couple from Zeeble. He took one from Cunnington. He is a tough nut. There was one there that I thought he wasn't going to get up for. Let's talk about him. I reckon it was his best game for the club. So far,
yep. Yeah,
11 and 4.
Even though, preempting our awards, I kind of think
you guys are preempting everything tonight. So what change?
Hey, all I said was yes. That
time. Shut up. Nikki. 11 and 4 for 15. 4 marks. Kicked a goal. A couple of tackles. 4 inside 50s. 7 contested possessions, only 60% disposal efficiency. It's probably the only knock. 5 score involvements, 284 metres gained, 5 intercept possessions. He was obviously far more involved, like position-wise. I felt like he got some minutes higher up the ground. But he just impressed me with his pace, his presence of mind, and his willingness to put his body over the ball.
And he's a bloody good mark.
Well, he's got a heap of attributes, not just one. You know, and, I think he's going to develop into an extremely good player.
Yeah.
The one downside, and I think where that disposal efficiency comes in, was a couple of times. One in particular, he picked up the ball and he just weaved past these North players that just kind of stared in his wake, going, "We can't catch that." And then he goes for a short pass instead of kicking for goal.
Yeah.
That's the bit. He should have been greedy and taken that kick instead.
That's a young player, though, deferring to others.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, he's definitely midfield potential. He's going to be an excellent midfielder for us. And the sooner he can get into those rotations, the better off we will be, because I think he is a genuine inside-outside player. And I think there's a touch of class about him to go along with the hardness that he showed. It certainly surprised me somewhat. Richie Douglas may as well get ready for a season in the SANFL next year, because Jordan Gallucci is what Richard Douglas could have been, in my opinion.
With speed.
I think he's got more talents overall than Richard Douglas had.
Dougie was a good player.
He was,
he was a good AFL player.
But I think Gallucci's got more versatility about him in the sense of the assets that he brings to the table. And once he becomes mature and confident and has that feeling of belonging and doing his own thing, I think he's going to be very good.
Mm. On the subject of Richard Douglas, I actually will have him nominated a bit later, but was he as bad at the ground, Nikki, as what he looked on TV?
Nope.
Please explain.
So he was part of the midfield rotations, and then when he would go up forward, his job was to actually mind Majak. And so he was trying to take Majak out of the play. The only problem is that our players would see Dougie leading to the side, and, of course, they'd kick to him and kind of forget that there's a much taller and quicker player on him.
I was astounded by the amount of times we kicked it to bloody Majak Dore.
And that was the thing, was Dougie was doing the right thing of trying to take him out of the play and faking of, like, oh, kick it to me. He didn't want them to kick it to him. He was doing the right thing.
What was Dougie's role? Jump up and hit him on the kneecap.
He was dragging him away from the play. He was dragging him out wide, and we should have been kicking forward.
So that's, you know, a couple of occasions. But I was going to actually ask whether it was Richard Douglas's role to fumble the ball, to turn the ball over, and to generally play his teammates into disadvantage, because I thought he was woeful. With ball in hand, his primary role with ball in hand, I thought he was woeful.
Yeah, I thought he had a very average game.
Yeah.
I'd have to watch the game, sorry.
12 effective disposals out of 20.
That's not good enough.
I think he tries, though, Phoenix.
I'm not saying he doesn't try.
Just not, but, you know, he's just becoming not good enough.
Look, I feel like when Dougie's good, he does some very good things. He's a very capable player. But he has some traits that when he's not in 100% peak form, that he gets exposed. And one of them is his inability to keep his feet under pressure. And the second one is he does turn the ball over under pressure. And both those traits were evident today. I felt like he was terrible below his knees. And it was a nothing game from Dougie. And with a couple of other midfielders coming up through the ranks in Gallucci and Greenwood and maybe Miller are moving in there next year as well, it's got to be nearly time up for Richard, in my opinion.
Well, they gave him 1 year, didn't they? 1 year one year extension?
Yeah, it was just 1 year.
I think that was recognition. Look, let's not drag this on too much more. I thought JJ was really good, and if I had to pick a most improved for the 2018 season, I would pick Josh Jenkins, because his desire to compete. He's never going to be a classic Wayne Carey type mark everything, but all we were screaming out for him to do is compete and bring the ball to ground, and I feel like he's really now solidified himself into a very good key position forward. Only the 7 kicks and 6 handballs, but he took 3 marks, kicked 3 goals, 1 couple of hit outs, 6 contested possessions, 6 score involvements as well. I think he's finally maturing, and probably this is you know, instructed by his late start and his basketball background, but I feel like he's finally maturing into a good key position forward.
Absolutely. He's the one forward that we've got that consistently now. This is a guy that we used to accuse of not putting in an effort, that is every week he's putting in a 100% effort. And even if he's not kicking a heap of goals, I mean, he got three himself, but there would have been others that came from his efforts at competing for the ball. So he's becoming worthy of the contract that he was given.
Yep.
Yeah, some really good, intelligent play that we've seen from him this year. Yep. Is what I've been pleased with as well. Kind of heard about how he does think a bit outside the box. We've seen that from some of his tweets and his articles, etc. But he does read the game very well at the ground, and he's been, and we've talked about how much he's been held lately. That other teams are really identifying that if they give him half a chance, he's going to be really damaging. And that's something that, as a forward, you can kind of hang your hat on, that they're giving you that much attention.
Yeah. Yeah. And a fit Tex an Onsong McGovern, or, you know, maybe even a Himmelberg in there, you know, will hopefully take some of that focus away. Because let's face it, JJ's been our sole consistent forward this year. He's played pretty much a lone hand. There's been some cameos from other players, but JJ has been a constant. He's nearly up to 40 goals for the season after a slow start. And, you know, I've been one of his biggest critics, but everything that I've criticised him about over the past few years, I feel like he's addressed. And the biggest thing is now he doesn't shy away from physical contact. He actually embraces it and takes it, and that was the main thing that I wanted to see from him. So I'm quite happy now that he's our centre half forward and that he's progressed his game and developed his game enough to fulfil that role.
Even in his ruck work, he uses his body a lot more as well. Yep. So all round well done by Josh to come from being, I think, rightly criticised by everybody for a lack of physical effort to raise his game to where he is, out of all the forwards, the only one that's given a consistent year. You know, if you look at Lynch, whether you look at,
there's been Walker, no continuity really between the others.
No, Eddie, McGovern, Norton, you know, there's been really nobody else that's really consistently helped him.
No.
So I think well done by him.
Yeah. Look, I think that's probably enough for the individuals. We'll get to our awards for the week, shall we?
Can we just mention one or two others? Andy Otten, I think, I was very critical of his being chosen, but I thought that Andy did have a good game, and I thought that when you consider he stood a guy in Ben Brown, and I know they didn't deliver the ball very well to him, but I got to say, well done by Andy. And also David Mackay, who's one of the most maligned players. That poor bugger got flattened and killed about 10 times, but he did get up and keep going. So I think they both deserve a mention.
Yeah, I think Otten and Cheney controlling that back line, they were very undersized, but between the pair of them, they're both very clever players, and they know how to work things to their advantage. And some of the ways that Otten was working Brown to make sure he couldn't get the free run at it so much. And it was a very clever play. And, yeah, I think he might be lucky to get – he might get an extension maybe next year, but I think it should be mostly in the SNFL as a break class in case of emergency option.
Yeah. Well, it's not often that Andy doesn't play a solid game. Like, no. Let's be honest.
He comes in,
he does a job, and I think it's worth a contract. You know, I guess some of it will depend on list structure and all the rest of it, but if we've got room on our list, he's certainly one to keep in that break glass capacity, as you say, Nicky. And you're right, Macca, he deserved a mention because I felt like he did do a really good job on Ben Brown, and given how undersized our defence was this week, and with those two tall targets that they had, if they'd have both got off the chain, we would have been in trouble. So, yep, absolutely right. Who was the other one you wanted to speak about?
Oh, I'll just say Dave McKay. I just thought that, you know, for guy got cleaned up several times, and I'm not talking about little hits. He got some big hits, but he's got a lot of courage. Even maybe he's got no sense. I would have laid there, but you know, he got up, and you know, I thought he did try, and even after he'd been flattened several times,
he always tries, Maker.
And I do think that Zeeble has got a case to answer for a head high hit on him.
Maybe. There's no one ever questions D-Mac's courage. It's usually his use, ball use, that is annoying. 22 touches for D-Mac is a good return, 12 and 10. And he went at 77% and gained us 400 metres. So he did his job. Can't deny it. Right, let's move on to our award, shall we? So, I don't know, Jet of the Week, for mine, I don't know, I'll leave it up to you guys, because it's a real mixed bag as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, for me it's actually really hard, because there's moments in the game where you had certain players were better than others, but the consistency over the four quarters is actually a bit more difficult, because I think Miller needs to be up there. Even though you were kind of ranking on Gibbs a bit, I just thought he was so influential. And I know you kind of didn't like Crouchy's game, but I thought Crouchy was up there amongst their best players. But
I think you've got to have Jenkins in there as well.
Pick who. Yeah, he did. And he did really well in the ruck around the ground as well.
Yeah, I think it's really going to be just a matter of personal opinion here, but I would have given it to Matt Crouch for his game, but I accept that others don't necessarily agree with that. It's the way you see the game. If you nominated Laird, that's a reasonable nomination. If you nominated Seed, that's a reasonable one. And also, same with
Miller. Yeah, he played well too.
Yeah.
So, they, you know, it becomes a personal opinion after that.
I think it's almost a toss of the coin.
Well, it is. And
it's really hard.
So, who is your Phoenix?
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking about it from the point of view of influence on the game, and I'm almost leaning towards Jenkins, because I feel like the midfield in general broke even. They got on top at times, and then they fell away at other times. But I felt like Jenkins was certainly the player in our team that maybe had the most influence, along with maybe Seedsman.
Well, they're both very good. What about you, Nikki?
I actually like the idea of Jenkins, because whilst, yeah, he didn't get too much of it, he was being held out of the play a lot, but when he had the opportunity to really make an impact, and he did out of little slight chances and things like that, and I think you can't go past that. I think, yeah, he very much was the difference.
In the chat, it has been mentioned by a couple there, which I think they're 100% right. Dode was going to be my jet of the game until he got smashed. But then he didn't finish the game. But so, I mean, I'm happy to go with whoever gets the majority. So, because I thought there were probably about five of them that were about even.
Yeah, no, look, that's true, and I think you're right, and the boys on the chat are right too. Today certainly was racking it up before he got crunched. And got to say, I hope Bryce Gibbs goes and bloody helps him out, because it was Bryce Gibbs' fault that all happened, because Bryce was indecisive with ball in hand, and it led to them fluffing around, and then...
No, that was Crouchy.
No, it wasn't Crouch, it was Bryce. I wrote it down. It was Bryce that actually made the initial error that led to that whole fluffing around.
The handball over the top, that was Crouch.
No, it wasn't. I'm talking about...
I'm pretty sure it was Crouch.
I'm talking about the lead-up to that. I know it was Crouch that made the handball, but what initiated that whole little passage of play was Bryce Gibbs stuffing something up. I can't remember what he did, but he either didn't make a pass or he missed a target or something, and then as a result, there was a series of handballs that led to Crouchy doing what he did, which led to Dude being put in the position that he had to basically go for a ball that he was always going to get crunched on.
Yeah, he was. He was set up, no doubt about it.
You could see it coming a mile out. All right, let's go on to our breakout award, shall we? WMJ?
Well, my nomination for that would be Gallucci. I just thought that he went in this particular game from being a little contributor on the side to a guy that went out there that thought he was good enough to go and get his own ball and play his own part of the game. And I thought I really liked what I saw about his attitude towards the game.
I think those three of Dude, Miller and Gooch. And for me, as much as I loved Miller's game and 2 days until he got injured, I have to agree with Macca that this was a real step forward for Gallucci, because we've noticed that he tends to get most of his possessions in the last quarter, but he's from the start, he was making an impact.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I think that Miller probably had more influence on the game. I certainly agree that it was Gallucci's best game, and I'm happy for that reason to give the Gooch the breakout award this week just for that reason, I think. Let's round this all up with the Wake Up Award. There might be a couple of nominations for that one. I really have to cut this one down, you know.
No, it's the Live Again.
Yeah, Licky Brown was quiet.
I like the song, though.
Yeah, no, it's good. Licky Brown, I thought, was quiet. Riley Knight didn't justify his selection over Lockie Murphy. Mitch McGovern was in and out. Jake Kelly was in and out. I don't know. What do you guys reckon?
Well, I think until he went back, Mitch McGovern definitely was in my mind for this particular award.
I'd kick two goals, mate.
Yeah.
I am being harsh. I expected more.
You are being harsh.
Okay, I mean, look, up to half time, he had two kicks and two handballs, Nick, so it's not terribly harsh.
Yeah, I wasn't really wrapped in his game until he went back. But and also, I think Eddie to some degree too. No, I didn't think Eddie had a great game.
No, that's a good call, actually, Macca.
But considering you absolutely slammed Dougie, why doesn't he get a nomination?
Oh, of course, yeah.
I thought he was the lay-down winner.
Well, I kind of put him out of my mind.
Well, the only thing against that, of course, is he may be playing to full capacity.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that he shouldn't wake up. pardon me. I just felt I was really disappointed with Riley Knight's game, and I felt like his inclusion needed to be justified on the basis of dropping Lockie Murphy, who I don't think had actually done a lot wrong.
I don't think he had, but I do wonder whether that was a management thing regarding Murphy.
Yeah, but why Riley Knight, who's had knee tendonitis all year and played with a dirty great brace on?
Yeah, I must admit, I wouldn't have played him with that on.
I mean, I just felt like even his trademark mongrel wasn't really on show. You know, he had 6 kicks, 7 handballs, 10 effective disposals for the match, only 4 contested possessions. Kicked the goal, obviously, in the goal square there that he nearly fluffed up. I don't know, I just felt like it was a bit of a nothing game from Riley, and he is a low disposal player anyway, so he needs to make impact. And I don't know, I was disappointed for Lockie Murphy getting dropped, and I felt like someone like Patrick Wilson could have been selected in this particular game over Riley Knight to play that half forward role. even though that's not Patrick's usual position. So I was expecting more from Knight on the basis that he got selected, if that makes sense.
He started off not too bad, but then he really faded.
Mm. I don't know. How'd you see it, Mac?
Well, it's a toss-up. I think probably when you look at it objectively between Knight and Douglas, because they're probably two of the worst that we had. So, I think I'd probably like your Douglas one.
Yeah, like my Douglas one.
Yeah.
All right.
Well. I thought he was very ineffectual.
Well, he was definitely that. He's definitely that. All right. Well, that leaves us with Nikki's. Go for it, Nick.
Well, Michael Christian. Elements of a sling tackle. Oh, you wanker. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a given.
Tell us how you really feel.
He's a wanker. He needs to be fired at the end of the year.
I don't disagree with that at all.
He's been a blight this entire season, and how he didn't get sacked at the start of the year after abusing an umpire. It just shows you how pathetic the AFL really are. Mm. Weirdly enough, my dad actually said that we should nominate Rucci for an anti-cock womble. Because lately he's actually been talking sense and making sense and not being as... Well, because my mother listens to 5AA. I keep trying to stop her, but she does. She likes to yell at them. And he had a Port supporter. So this is a cockwomble is going to be given to all those Port supporters who rang up 5AA yesterday morning to complain about their lack of column inches this week.
Oh, God.
Because the Crows got more stories than they did. And Rucci had to turn around and go, well, what are the stories for Port? We report on the news. There are actually 17 sporting teams in this town. Nobody gets an equal amount. Who gets reported are those that have actually news to report.
The irony was, Dickie, that they're complaining about the lack of reporting for Port Adelaide. There was two full pages on the bastards in that very day.
Yeah, they don't pay attention.
Well, let's not forget that a lot of Port supporters can't actually read, so they might actually...
you're onto something there.
They might not realise that articles are about them. They might actually... Like, if it hasn't got a picture, it's not really an article, Macca, for a Port supporter. So there might have been some columns with just a headline and some text, and they would have thought it was an ad or something.
And a comic to finish with.
Yeah, exactly right.
So Slime Ranger 3 actually has a very good point. There's Zorko for his reaction at the end of the game.
Yeah, he was going to be my pick. I thought he was a dickhead.
Yeah, that was just not on.
Very, very lack of sportsmanship, wasn't it?
And apparently Kane Corn says that Port is not his team. He just played for them.
Oh, he's a wank. Now he is a wank.
I mean... I think the thing with Kane Corns is that if he was up, if he was allowed to be nominated whenever he deserved to be nominated, we'd just call it the cock-wombling Corns numnut of the week because no one else would get a look in. So don't we have a rule about Kane Corns only being nominated once every month or something or other?
Yeah, something like that. Because most of the time, well, the reason I normally Rucci and Kane Corns are not nominated is because I don't bother listening to them. Therefore, I have no idea what they've said because they don't deserve to be aired.
I must say about Kane Corns, though, someone brought something up during the week on Big Footy, which I thought was very pertinent in relation to Kane Corns' ongoing sledging of Tex Walker as captain or whether he should be captain of the Adelaide Football Club. This gentleman recounted the time that Kane Corns came runner-up at the Best and Fairest at Port Adelaide. I forget who won. And Kane obviously felt that he should have won and had to be restrained by his father from walking out of the Best and Fairest prior to receiving his runners-up award. And his award speech consisted of about 5 words. Now, that's not the actions of someone who can have any sort of opinion at all about anyone's ability to lead or what their leadership qualities are. In fact, Cane Corn shouldn't make any personal statements regarding other people, because what he did at that Best and Fairest, I think it was 2005, what he did at that Best and Fairest night just showed what a petulant little child he really is, and nothing's changed since he's gone into the media.
It's hard to argue with.
No, he's been employed to be a troll.
But he is by nature, but he's got no credibility, yeah. Nikki, because his personality is such that he is the type of person who would walk out on his own club's Best and Fairest because he didn't win an award he felt he should have won, and then to get up and not be gracious in his speech. I mean, if ever there was someone who was full of their own self-importance more than Cane Corns, I'm yet to see it.
He's also a stager.
Yeah, he's everything. Everything that he criticises, he actually personifies. Everything, Nikki.
Yeah, so, I mean, is he actually a respected player? And I would say if you polled his peers at the time, that would be a no.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
I can't say what I really think about it, because otherwise I might get sued. That's why I'm not saying very much.
But I do think Zorko for this week, he has to win it.
Yep.
Yeah, good one.
Just for that reaction at the end. I really like Zorko as a player, but he was still trying to bait Suns players.
I think he has got a bit of dickhead about him, Dane Zorko.
Yep.
Not the first time he's done a few dickhead things like that, and
no.
I think there is a bit of that about him.
Hodge's influence is showing through up at Brisbane.
No, Zorko's been like that before Hodge turned up.
He has, but I think it's been enhanced this year.
Yeah, maybe.
I think he's done it before too, though, Nicky. Been before Hodge went up there. I think he's got a little bit of petulance in him, and he actually makes a fool of himself.
Yeah. Anyway, look, I reckon we've done pretty well to hit the 90-minute mark, considering we're going to only make this a quick one. Thank you to everyone who joined us on Facebook Live. Excellent to see you there making some comments. We had Amanda from Calgary, I think it was, in Canada listening in, and she's currently watching the game and then going to watch the Crowcast again on replay. So thanks for joining us, guys. Thanks to our stalwarts in the Spreaker chat, another lively discussion, over 600 comments on Spreaker, and I'm going to work out a way of putting it on our Facebook Live feed so people can see how much activity there is on our Spreaker chat, because it adds to the enjoyment, I think, of us doing it on a Sunday night as well. Don't you reckon, guys?
It's definitely fun.
And some very good stuff on there as well.
Yeah, excellent comments.
Sometimes I'm paying attention to the chat and I'm going, oh, hang on, what player was Phoenix talking about?
No, they know their stuff. And I pinch a lot off of them when I'm looking at it. So it's good stuff.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was going to say, make sure you don't miss Tuesday. I reckon it'll be pretty lively on Tuesday.
DSG, who the hell is Brian? DSG's just said, say hello to Brian, please. Who the hell is Brian?
Hi, Brian.
I don't know who the hell Brian is. Hello,
he's
Brian.
Not the Messiah.
Yeah, that's right. Look, don't forget you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at AFL Crowcast. You can listen to us just about everywhere. If you're listening to us on iTunes, please drop a review for us. That'd be great. We're now on TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Facebook Live, obviously, and you can catch us on demand on any of those places, including our own website, even YouTube these days. So get around us. Thanks for your ongoing support. We'll be back again on Tuesday night for Tuesday Night Live, where I am sure that'll be a lively night's discussion. In the meantime, thank you, Nikki. Thank you, Macca.
Not all.
And pleasure. We'll bugger off and have a good week, everyone.
Yeah, good night, all.